From Jefferson Public Radio at Southern Oregon University, this is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Coming up after the news, chronically hurtful people, how to identify and deal with the difficult, destructive, and disconnected. It's a recently self-published book by Roxanne Livingston, a therapist, teacher, and trainer working in and around Salem. She's met more than a few of the CHPs in her work, and in this case, of course, CHP does not mean California Highway Patrol, but chronically hurtful people. These are the people who are, unlike the rest of us, capable of inflicting emotional damage much of the time. The many training sessions Roxanne Livingston has held morphed into the book. We'll get an education on recognizing the traits and techniques of the chronically hurtful and get an idea of the approach to treating them and talk about possible success rates. Roxanne Livingston, Chronically Hurtful People, and your phone calls and emails ahead on the Jefferson Exchange after this hour's news. I'm Jeffrey Riley, and I'm glad you're along for the ride today. In this hour, the people who bug us over and over and don't seem to take the hint to stop. These are the people therapist Roxanne Livingston calls chronically hurtful people. We'll talk to Roxanne about the concept and the book by the same name in just a couple of minutes. Most of us have met a few people in our lives who seemed hell-bent on inflicting emotional damage on the people around them, and no approach from yelling at them to pleading with them seemed to change their behavior. Roxanne Livingston is a licensed professional counselor, a teacher, trainer, and therapist working generally around Salem, Oregon. She trains health professionals how to deal with those problem people. Her term for them and her book carry the same name, Chronically Hurtful People. Roxanne Livingston is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Roxanne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Glad to be here.
Very good to have you. And I'll tell you, there's a bunch of red flags that go up when you read this book. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I know a person like that.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, I think. So tell us a bit about you and your practice.
Well, I'm a psychotherapist, and I do a lot of training. My clients that I serve are not generally chronically hurtful people, but many of my clients come to therapy because they are dealing with a chronically hurtful person, be it an employee, an employer, a sibling, a family member. The people that are chronically hurtful don't generally come to therapy because they don't see themselves as having problems, but they certainly wreak havoc and cause problems for others. So I'm a general therapist, and I work on see couples and do groups. But I've been training professionals, well, impaired professionals in the mental health field, child protective services, medical school personnel, corrections for 30 years, and how to work with this small percentage of their clients that take up such a huge percentage of their energy. So I started doing that years ago, and it seems to be a useful thing for people to learn.
Did your clients, were they the ones who came up to you and said, you know, you should really put this into a book?
Well, my clients did, and also people that I was offering this training to. Very often I would offer a training, and they'd say, oh, my gosh, not only do I have some of my clients that I work with in my hospital or my health clinic or school, but I live with one of these people, and I wish you'd write it down. So over years I've been thinking about writing the book, and finally I just set my mind to it and did it.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point with the fact that people do end up spending a lot of time with chronically hurtful people, because
right.
They may not be the most important people in your life, but they're going to take up a lot of your time. Plus, you're going to get mad at them and probably spend a lot of time thinking about them when you're done.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. And my broad definition when I talk about this population is that these people are not interested in the negative consequence they have for other people. But basically, responsible people who are credible and connected to others and have a basic sense of trust and feel their humanity with others, they don't think about other people doing hurtful things just as a matter of course. And so if you live with or work with someone like this, it is confusing, and people can spend a lot of time thinking about it and what's wrong with me and what did I do, and it takes a while to get it that maybe it's this other person, and maybe that person really is not thinking the same way you do, and maybe they have a different mindset.
Is the problem often that we try to approach them with some sense of like, hey, we're all part of the same
race
and we're all civil and all that jazz, and they just don't play by those rules?
Right, exactly. That's a real good way to say it. They play by completely different rules. I mean, one of my trainers years ago would say there are the polite people and the rude people. Polite people think differently than rude people. And I thought that was great, yeah.
When you refer to, and we do use a CHP as a shorthand here, and we don't mean the California Highway Patrol for
listeners. Yeah.
Right, chronically hurtful people. Different, totally. But you refer to the chronically hurtful people as a population. Are there any guesses or estimates on perhaps what percentage of us might be CHP?
Well, you know, I really don't know. We used to say it's probably 10% or less of the population. In clinical circles, in psychological circles, most of these people would fall in the diagnostic category of personality disorders, and there's a broad range of personality disorders. I wrote the book the way I did because one of the themes that run through all of the personality disorders is this irresponsibility, the thinking about other people instead of as I, you, or I, thou. It's I, it. And lack of concern about the effect that they have on others. So that's just a broad thing that runs through all the personality disorders. And I can't remember your question. What did you just ask me?
Whether there were guesses on
the
percentage of the population.
So when we think about personality disorders, we normally think that that's a fairly small percentage of the population. But who knows? They do, when you are dealing with a person, whether it's in a soup kitchen or a hospital emergency room or a school or a corrections facility or a health clinic or whatever, these people will take up most of your time because of their behavior.
That it was really interesting a moment ago when you talked about instead of I, you, I, thou, it's I, it.
Right.
So they don't see other people as people, I guess.
Yeah, there's a disconnect. It's as if I'm the center of the world and everything revolves around me, and so you're significant to me as you serve me in some way, or as you give me some sense of excitement, or you do something that serves me or excites me, but in some way. But you're not significant with your thoughts, feelings, and who you are for yourself.
And you write in the book that you had once thought that chronically hurtful people were people who just hadn't been loved enough.
Right.
Do you still feel that way?
Well, you know, in a certain sense, you could say that it's much more complex than that. I talk about in the book that people always want to know, well, how did people get like this? Because it is difficult to understand. I mean, I've worked with really dangerous people and all kinds of disconnected people in institutions, and I think, how did they get like this? But really, it's difficult to understand. When you think about how we grow up, we're affected by so many different influences and so many things. And I just hypothesize that some of these people had either abandonment or indulgence in their childhood, but that doesn't mean it's diagnostic, because a lot of us had some kind of emotional or physical abandonment and didn't end up like this.
So then what would lead people to be like this?
Well, that's what we can't really know. It's probably a combination of factors. But the important thing about that is if you're doing long-term therapy with someone, then I'm very interested in that question, because I want to sort out all the details and go back and ferret it all out. But in our day-to-day lives, when dealing with an irresponsible person, and that's broadly what this is, a lot of irresponsibility, we have to focus on they're doing what they're doing by choice. There is maybe a reason why they act that way, but there's no excuse. So one of the errors clinicians can make is they have a client like this in their office, and they begin supporting developmental reasons or historical reasons, but there's no excuse for behaving irresponsibly. When working with this kind of person, instead of going toward their feelings and sorting out how they feel about things, we look at their thinking and their behavior, how you treat other people, because with this population, rather than the diagnosis being about the individual, their depression, their anxiety, their internal issues, we're thinking about a two-person diagnosis. In other words, this client and how they affect the other, because the hurtful behavior is the problem.
So you can't fix them, but you can perhaps realign their thinking and the way it's expressed outwardly as behavior?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, it depends on, in the book I talk about getting people's attention. When you think about a person who, one way to understand this a little bit better would be, think about a person who is a drug addict or an alcoholic. While they are drinking and using, they fit this chronically hurtful people profile. When they're clean and sober, they might not, and they might. They might still be chronically hurtful even though they're no longer drinking or using. But while they are drinking and using, they're very self-centered. They're totally focused on themselves, and they're not interested in others. So that's the kind of issue. And with those people, we know with alcoholics and drug addicts, they talk about hitting the bottom or getting their attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have to pick it up there
on
the other side of a break. Here comes the break. So, Roxanne, you were just saying something about when people hit bottom. Is that something that really...
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And people mostly know these days that that is talked about in terms of addictions, that people have to really, the alcoholic or the drug abuser has to really get it, that they have to take charge of their life. The same thing is true for anyone who is in a chronically hurtful pattern. But the problem is employers or family members spend their time trying to get the person to that place, and that's really often a dead-end street. You can spend so much of your energy trying to get the attention of somebody who's just not interested in that. So getting someone's attention takes a lot of work. And the person themselves that has this problem has to identify that they have a problem.
And that's a very, very hard road, it sounds like.
It's hard. And you know, these when we're talking about chronically hurtful people, people can look really good, really behave responsibly in areas of their life and hold public office and be involved in their churches and community and look wonderful, but they may have another side of their life where they're just behaving horribly, abusing their children or taking money from people, lying, cheating. And it's confusing because they can very often present as being just super great people, but really the part of them that's the problem where they hurt others.
Well, and it seems like particularly in a therapeutic sort of setting or in any sort of situation where you're dealing with this person as client or customer, that it's an asymmetrical relationship. You can't be hurtful back, certainly in therapy.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, it's very challenging, but you learn, and I teach people to do this, you learn to think scientifically and neutrally and not engage with the hurtfulness, because when you begin looking at how, when you realize you've got a person who is this kind of manipulative or a person who fools people, that, let me just say that one thing I say, that these people are expert at fooling people and expert at eliciting support. So oftentimes when they do get referred to therapy, they fool the therapist too, and the therapist will say, oh, what a wonderful person, and completely miss the hurtfulness that they're, how they're behaving out in the world. But when you do get it, if you're working with someone clinically, you learn to think scientifically and watch how they're thinking, and you really work with challenging their behavior and how they think about their behavior. And it's a different kind of therapy because you're working with homework and holding people really accountable for what they do, not just what they say they're going to do. A lot of these people are excellent at sounding fantastic and saying all the right things, but it's what they actually do and how they treat that other, their employer, their employee, their child, their spouse, their whatever, that's the issue.
So they do or do not notice the hurt they inflict on people?
No, they don't. They may notice it because it may give them a jolt of adrenaline or energy, but they don't care about it. One of the broad things I talk about is this lack of caring about another or anything. This disconnect from the self, the core self, also presents as disconnect from caring about ideals, dreams, another person. There's that a deep disconnect in all those arenas. So, yeah, they just don't care.
There was an example that you gave in the book that just kind of makes the hair stand up on the back of your head, and it was, I believe, a busload of kids from...
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the story?
Yes.
Why don't you tell it for us?
Okay, yes. This was telling. I was training, I think that was a group of corrections officers and workers, social workers at a juvenile corrections program, and they were talking about... one social worker was talking about transporting a vanload of kids to a wilderness program or something, and as they came across the pass, Santa Ann Pass, they saw a mother deer and a baby, I mean, a mother doe and a baby fawn crossing the road. And to a kid, these kids were very antisocial kids. And to a kid, they said, smash him, kill him, run him over. And the driver of the van and the social worker was absolutely horrified because they had worked with other kids this age who were not this disconnected. And those kids would have said, oh, be careful, don't hit them. Oh, that cute little thing. Oh, be real careful, where's the mama? But no, this van was just very aggressive about, yeah. So, yeah, very disturbing. And I thought, well, what a great example of the difference.
It really is, and it certainly does open your eyes. But it raises the question, too, since particularly with kids, I mean, this behavior is often learned from other people, isn't it?
Well, it is partly learned. It can be learned from others. Children that grow up with people who are hurtful can learn aggressive behavior. But if they haven't yet disconnected within themselves, that's the thing. When you can get children young enough and work with them and can do repair, sometimes you can prevent this becoming a lifelong pattern. But just growing up with someone who is hurtful toward you doesn't mean you yourself will become hurtful. In fact, one of the things I am always astounded at, I've worked with so many clients over the years who have had absolutely horrendous abuse and abandonment and you know, lying, cheating parents, whatever, and they themselves are loving and connected. They may have problems with depression and anxiety and other things, but they don't treat people in a hurtful way. So you can't always say that it's modeled from someone else. I know other people who've had what look like really healthy, loving environments, and they themselves grew up to be chronically hurtful. You know, when I said earlier, these people, chronically hurtful people, can show up in all arenas of life. I mean, you can think of some people in the public sphere, political sphere, who have great popularity, and then you find out they've been lying or running away with funds, or you know, and doing other chronically hurtful things.
Let us take a call. I'm not surprised we have any waiting. Here's Gene in Winston. Thank you for waiting. And you're on the air with Roxanne Livingston, the author of Chronically Hurtful People.
Yes. Nice to be on the air with you.
Thank you.
Yes, I've known a couple of people like this, and I read a book, I think it's by Martha Stroud, called The Sociopath Next Door. I did have a sociopath next door who stole from me and other people. And Martha Stroud thinks that about 4% of people are in this category, and they are neurologically deficient. When their brainwaves are recorded and you say words like love and mother and stuff like that, that ordinary people would have a reaction to, they don't. My personal belief is that these people are not fully human. They should be reacted to and treated like wild animals. That's how I feel.
Okay, well, you know, sociopath, it would be an extreme end of what I'm talking about. The people I'm talking about, well, let me just back up and say that all of us can fall on a continuum between very irresponsible to responsible. The sociopathic person that, I haven't read that book, but I'm familiar with it a little bit, she's talking about the extreme end of the irresponsible. And there are, you know, some people will say, well, there's neurological differences, but in a lot of people who I would call chronically hurtful people, you wouldn't find those neurological differences. So, yeah, I think that may be true for the sociopath, which would be the extreme. But broadly, there are people who behave in chronically hurtful ways who really have high positions in our culture and society, and I think people wouldn't say they should be treated like wild animals. I don't agree with that either. I think I think when you have somebody who is extremely destructive, and let's say, you know, a mass murderer or doing other sociopathic things, sometimes we don't know what to do besides lock them up, and that may be the only option. But unfortunately, a lot of the people that really do destructive things on a much less extreme manner, hurt people in their lives, don't do things that are arrestable. They don't do criminal things.
Interesting. Our guest today is Roxanne Livingston. She's a therapist, a psychotherapist, and her book is called Chronically Hurtful People, How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and Disconnected. You can join our discussion on The Exchange at 800-838-3760, toll-free anywhere in the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Roxanne, just to recap, I mean, sociopaths can be chronically hurtful people, but not all chronically hurtful people are sociopaths.
Right, exactly. Thank you.
Got it. Okay. So the idea then that some people might have to go away from what Gene was talking about, where you treat them like wild animals, but it sounds like also you can't use the approach of trying to kill them with kindness because it doesn't really register on them.
No. I mean, one of the things that I teach people to do is to focus on, if you're living with someone that you've over time just tried to get through to, or you're working with someone, rather than trying to fix or change them, focus on how you feel and what you need so you can set better boundaries and take better care of yourself. Many times people will spend a lot of energy trying to understand and support and fix or change this other person instead of, what do I need to feel more comfortable and more safe in my life? What can I do to get my needs met besides looking toward this person who is not really going to stand up to the plate and help me with my needs?
So it's really about maybe not so much setting up defensive barriers as detaching to some degree,
right,
as the folks in Al-Anon talk about.
Exactly. It's kind of learning to be more scientific and neutral in the way you look at people, to look at, that's much easier to do, I will say, in a clinical setting. I can say that I'm an expert at being fooled. I mean, I've had clients that I thought were one way, and then over time I realized, oh my gosh, I really have a chronically hurtful person here. Like I say, most of these people don't voluntarily come to therapy. But when I do have someone like that, I have to shift the way I look at it and move into more a scientific position and really focus on their behavior and their thinking. And it's a long process, hooking them into really taking responsibility for their life. When you live with someone or work with someone, that's not your job. You're not a clinician. You're not there to engage them in a process that might really be useful for them and for others. You really are in kind of, how can I survive and not be so distressed by this person? That's really what you're working with.
Right, because you can't really be a therapist for someone you're living with.
Yeah, right, okay. Exactly.
That makes sense. So when you talk about their resistance in going to therapy, for example, do chronically hurtful people, is it that they can't change their behavior or won't?
Well, they're not interested in it usually.
Mm-hmm. They don't think there's a problem?
They don't think there's a problem. These are people, Martin Groder, who was one of the people I dedicated this book to and one of my trainers years ago, wonderful man, he said, these people plant landmines for other people to trip over, and some of them lose the map themselves. So a person who is, he was talking about personality disorders, but a person who is that disconnected thrives on creating uproar and distress outside of themselves. It's as if they don't have a real core sense inside of who they are, so they are dependent on wreaking havoc in other people's lives, setting up fights or upsetting people, and they sort of feed like a vampire off of the other person's distress. So they don't see themselves as having a problem. They cause problems.
Well, and then so that gives them a chance to do things like to consider themselves the victims of other people's
exactly.
outbursts. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for you're really getting this. That's right. One of the things that I talk about is that these people, no matter what they're doing, they consider themselves the victim. So there's a lot of what Stanton Samanow talked about is thinking errors, and other people have talked about is thinking errors. They use blame and excuse and a lot of justifying and whatever to put themselves always in the blame position. I think I talk about in the book Chapter 2 people. They don't pay attention to what they did, like they, lied to their boss or took funds from their office. But when they get fired, they're the victim, and they don't talk about what they did to get themselves there.
or the people, and I think there was an example like this in the book too, how a principal would talk to a student, and the student, of course, will try to deflect. It's like, well, yeah, I got into a fight, but he started it. And it's
right.
Like, what did you do to get this fight going?
Right. One of the things I teach people when they realize they have someone who is really the one that is creating these problems, which is sometimes tricky because they're so good at looking good and getting people to support them. But yeah, when you realize, hey, wait a minute, keep the focus on that person. What did you do to invite this fight? What did you do to get into a fight? That's the way I teach school personnel, medical people, and whatever, to put the responsibility back on the person, because otherwise you're going to be taken down the garden path and end up supporting, oh, this poor victim, when in fact they're the victimizer.
Well, and there are so many other things they do. It sounds like they're just kind of throwing a lot of rocks in the water to try to muddy things up to make sure that the person they're dealing with is as confused about what just happened or is about to happen.
Right, and that happens. I see that a lot in relationships. I do quite a lot of couples and family therapy, and I keep reiterating, the people that call me and want to come for therapy aren't these people. It's the people that are confused and distressed and have their waters muddied by these people, and they don't know what to do. And sometimes that the person that is creating the problem will come in then with them. And it's very interesting once you realize what you've got. As a therapist, you have to step back and kind of not be sucked into all that and really hold the person accountable. I used to think in family therapy or couples therapy that everything was a relationship, and that if one person did this, if one person changed, the other person would. But when you've got a person who's hell-bent on creating uproar for others, it's a very different thing. That person, no matter what the other people in the family do, from being super loving and supportive to confrontive, it may not make a difference.
Well, and it makes a difference for the clinician, too, in approaches, it sounds like, because you point out that normally clinicians are going to want to be at least somewhat empathic, but that just doesn't work with chronically hurtful people.
Right. I say empathy isn't all that noble. Now, that does not mean that as a clinician or anyone in a position of working with these people that you have license to be rude or hurt for yourself. Quite the opposite. It's a very different thing to be clear and hold people accountable. It's kind and firm. It's never mean or aggressive or putting people down, because then you're just entering the same kind of behavior that they are, and that gets nowhere.
We talked to somebody just last week with Asperger's syndrome, and I don't mean to draw any parallels between them, but just in the sense that there are certain things that he didn't feel. He didn't feel empathy. He felt compassion, but not empathy. And so he just kind of had to train himself to ask certain questions and pretend to be like this. He's really good at putting on masks.
Right.
Is that ultimately where you end up getting with the chronically hurtful people, is they really aren't going to feel these things so much as just kind of go through the motions?
Well, you know, that, yeah, with some, yes and no, there are some people, I don't know whether with some people you can ever really teach empathy, but what you can teach is understanding. And you can teach people to behave and to act responsibly toward others. Whether they ever feel that ability to put themselves in another's place and feel what that other person feels and thinks is less important in terms of how offices work or schools work or families work than the person behaves in a way that's thoughtful and kind and without duplicity, without lying, without trickery and all of that. So that again, I think is work for long-term work with people on a daily basis. Though when this is a person in your employ or whatever, you need to learn to just get it that this person's not going to be responsible.
All right, we'll talk more, much more to talk about with Roxanne Livingston. Her book is Chronically Hurtful People. We'll come back with Roxanne and take any phone calls after this break. Back on The Exchange in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is psychotherapist Roxanne Livingston. She's teacher, trainer, counselor, much more, now an author as well. Her book is called Chronically Hurtful People. How to Identify and Deal with the Difficult, Destructive, and Disconnected. So when we say CHP, we don't mean California Highway Patrol. We mean chronically hurtful people. And you can join Roxanne and our discussion at 800-838-3760, toll-free around the region in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Roxanne, I have to ask about the, when you talk about trying to work with people when they're in your employ, et cetera, it seems like in some cases, certainly, when you talk about the people who can compartmentalize, they may be really awful at home but okay at work, et cetera, that some of these people get a pass because they're the highly successful executive or the brilliant artist or something.
Exactly.
Okay, that does happen a lot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that's so troubling is that responsible people, I think we tend to think that people are what you see is what you get, or we tend to be trusting, and when you're credible and trusting in your own life, you project that on other people. And so it's startling when you realize that this person that you've worked on the church board with, or worked on a school committee with, or as a teacher in your school, or a politician that you've devoted attention to and elected, really has another side of them that isn't what it seems on the surface. It's disorienting.
Let us take a call. We have Jacob in Springfield on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Roxanne Livingston.
Hi, good morning. I want to touch on how psychiatry and psychology regard these people. They don't call them chronically hurtful. They're on a spectrum of what we call personality disorders.
Right, that's correct.
More difficult. Yeah, the more difficult personalities are, usually you find them in prison. If you go to prison, you could actually meet them.
Right. But
borderline personalities, narcissistic, antisocial. A lot of them are antisocial. They're destructive. But everyone, no two people have the same personality.
Right.
Everyone kind of exists on a spectrum.
Right, you're exactly right.
And let's say, like, someone who's selfish on the opposite end is selfless, okay? And you don't actually want to be too selfish, but you also don't want to be too selfless. You want to be somewhere in the middle. But if you go too far extreme on selfishness, you're a narcissist. If you go too far in the selflessness, you know, you don't have any drive or ambition.
Right. Okay?
Or if you're confident, if you're very confident, people see you as a leader, but you're also, you know, antisocial. But on the opposite end is kind of being spineless and always saying, I don't know, and I don't care, and I don't, you know, kind of being indifferent in life. And that's no way to live life. But everyone exists on a spectrum of different personality traits, and that's what kind of makes everyone so individual.
So did you have a question specifically?
I just wanted to make a point on personality disorder and how we understand it, but it's always good to be somewhere in the middle and not extreme on anything, confidence or spinelessness. You don't want to be too far on one end or the other. But the only time these enter, become major issues is when they collide with the law, when they cause dysfunctional behavior, when they cause relationship behavior, when they cause pain in other people's lives. But a lot of them might actually adapt. And some
right.
people who are considered very antisocial are also good business leaders.
Exactly.
So they might be
right.
pathological.
Right.
Thanks for the call, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks.
So go ahead. Did you have something you want to continue to say, Roxanne?
No, I just said, generally, I think he's just making a point, and I generally agree with him about that, yes.
There's an email here from Cindy, no town given. She says, I'm in a living circumstance with someone like this, and it's not changeable. Could you give some examples of what it means to be detached from that person? Things are fine if I deal with this person in a superficial, polite way, but we have to make real decisions with this person, and there are so often mines laid and attacks when it comes to decisions. Polite detachment is not effective in decision-making processes. So how would you advise her to move forward?
Well, without knowing more about the the circumstances and whether she has to live with this person or if there's a choice there, yes, when you realize you've got a person who's not cooperative and not responsible, regardless of what they say, you learn to realize that they that's where they are. So stop needing and wanting them to be that. One of the things that where we get in trouble in relationships is that we need and want from another person, and therefore we give them power. it's normal in human relationships to want another person to behave a certain way or to have needs from them. But when you've got a detached or a disconnected person, like we're talking about, when you need and want from them, you're vulnerable to them and you're giving them power. In their mind, if a person is really a chronically hurtful person, power, not relationship, is the name of the game. So they're always either looking at being one up, or they think they're one down if they're not one up. So you're, rather than having a two-way relationship, you're having a power struggle, whether you know it or not. So once you know that, you let go of needing and wanting them to be other than what they are. I know that's very, very difficult. But when you see that, that needing and wanting anything from them is not useful, then you can conduct your life more from, okay, how can I get my needs and wants met without depending on this person?
Well, let me see if I can come up with an example here then.
Okay.
Because say you're living with an elderly parent and they've got more money than you do and you got to get the roof fixed, for example, and you can't get them to start fighting with you often enough to just be able to talk about how you're going to approach this, who you're going to hire, what you're going to pay, et cetera. I mean, how do you deal with those kinds of situations where you need to get answers from the person, you need to work together on something, you need their cooperation, but they're just total chronically hurtful people?
You know, in that kind of a situation, and I've dealt with something like that, that's the time where, if that's what you're living with, that's where you do want to bring in a professional to help. I mean, one of the things that can really help, in, because you're not going to have the authority and power if it's been an ongoing power struggle with this person, and they're just going to say no no matter what to anything you do. And no matter how upset you get or how detached you get or how kind you get, nothing changes. That's the time I would say, get in to see somebody who can help you with this, and someone who understands this problem and is not going to be fooled and taken in by the, in this case, the elderly parent's behavior. I mean, with an elderly parent, it could be a kind of, I mean, if they weren't like that earlier, it could be they're having some dementia or other things. But let's just assume that they're mentally competent and they've just been kind of difficult all the time, and now you need this money from them or whatever. Then I say get a competent counselor to help you, because it's more likely you're going to get their attention or someone else is going to hold them accountable than you're ever going to be able to be.
All right, let's take a call. We have Tad in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Roxanne Livingston, the author of Chronically Hurtful People.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call.
Yes.
I have a scenario, a situation that I'm in, and I don't know if it's chronically hurtful, but it's what struck a chord with me in listening to you is that maybe I have to change my expectations rather than getting my son to change the way he is. And so I'd like to explain this situation, and if it applies, wonderful. If it doesn't, I certainly understand.
Yeah.
But I have a son who is in school, of which I pay money for him to go to school. And time and time again, he is failing at school and not doing well at school and really doesn't have an interest in school. And it leads to extreme frustration with my spouse and I in regards to how he's not getting the school work, he's not getting it done, so on and so forth. And I'm wondering if that's something that my spouse and I need to change our expectations or what we're wanting to have done, because it's not in alignment with him. And I don't know if it's chronic.
Right. Well, let me interrupt you because of time. I just want to say what you were saying, you don't know if it's chronic. And hearing what you've said, I couldn't really tell you that what is the basis for your son's behavior. It could be all kinds of things. He may not be a chronically hurtful person at all. If we had more time and I could get more history and his age and whatever and what's happened earlier, I could probably deal with it. But I wouldn't just assume that he's a chronically hurtful person. There may be all kinds of other things that account for why he's behaving the way he is. And if you haven't had an evaluation done by a competent psychologist, I think that would be a step to find out what is going on going on with him. But in terms of your question about changing your expectations, again, depending on the circumstance, sometimes holding high expectations is exactly good for a person. The only reason I talk about that, or a time I talk about that, is when you know for sure that you've got someone who really is not interested in changing. And that's a very hard call to make with a child. Sometimes you can see it with an adolescent, definitely, by the time, but it's a very hard call to make. But when you do realize that there's still no... It doesn't mean you're not loving and kind. It means you may set a different kind of limit. You may change, like you're saying, your expectation. You may spend less time being disturbed about it and accept more that this is a different thing than what you hope for. But with your son, I'd hate to make any kind of a treatment plan for you with such a little information, and I certainly wish you well with sorting it out.
Now, Tad, thanks for the call, and best of luck with that. Let's move on to Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome back to The Exchange with Roxanne Livingston. Her book is Chronically Hurtful People.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Livingston. Your book looks fascinating. It's a great subject. I did a quick search while I was waiting on Amazon, and it was noticed that you. I was appreciating that you mentioned both the issue of attachment. Now, this might affect these issues, and also you had a couple citations for the subject of shame, although there's been a lot more work done on that since John Bradshaw's book, so there's a lot more up-to-date stuff.
Right.
And I don't know if you're aware of Dr. James Gilligan, who wrote a book back in the early 90s called On Violence, and he was the director of the Massachusetts Prison Psychiatric Services for years, and he helped reduce the suicide rate and murder rate inside the prison system. And he makes a very strong connection between violence and shame. And it strikes me that a lot of the behaviors that you're describing are actually different kinds of accommodations or adaptations to people who simply don't know how to deal with the issue of shame in their lives.
So right.
About these defensive postures.
Well, and you know, a number of people, I'm blocking on the man's name now, Christian, I'm trying to think of the fellow's name, extensively on that topic, and that is certainly is one theory. I mean, that's the thing. There are a number of different theories about how people got so detached. Shame is one of them. Neurological problems is another. There's also environmental, all kinds of things that add to this. But and it's all interesting, and I think useful to look at. I think the issue is, when you have someone like this, how do you deal with it, and how do you look at it? But I'm certainly appreciating that reference. And I do remember, I didn't read that, but I do remember hearing about James Gilligan, yeah.
Is the term chronically hurtful people gaining some traction in psychological circles?
Did
it start with you? Or?
I think I invented it. I don't know. I really don't know, because when I wrote this book, I was wanting to write it in clear, non-jargon, non-psychological jargon so that it would be useful for people in all different clinics and school settings and medical and whatever that wouldn't necessarily understand language of character disorder and psychiatric jargon. But I just chose the name Chronically Hurtful People because it was the thread that runs through, as the gentleman earlier was talking about, the personality disorders. There's a variety of them, but that's one of the threads that runs through all of them. And as I've been training people over the years, I realized when we're talking about irresponsibility, we're talking about hurtfulness. It's hurtful. Irresponsible thinking and behavior is hurtful to the other. And that's the problem. When people behave irresponsibly and aren't concerned about their effect on others, it hurts them, their children, their family, society. And that's the core issue here, the hurtfulness.
You know, it's an odd sort of paradox, though, because these people are very self-centered. They are their whole world. But on the same token, when you're dealing with them, trying to guide their behavior as boss or principal or counselor, you have to focus like a laser beam on just their behavior, because they will try to scatter shoot it around.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And whether that comes from, you know, as the gentleman before called it, core sense of shame or other kinds of things, when you're dealing with someone who does that, scatters it around, puts you on another path, talks about other people, shifts the blame and responsibility, you have to, if you're going to get anywhere, you've got to bring the focus back to that person's behavior. And that for school personnel, for teachers, for doctors, medical clinics. I've worked with physicians and nurses and lots of training with healthcare personnel and health departments, and they have a certain percentage of clients that create so many problems because of exactly what you're talking about. They won't focus on their responsibility for even getting there on time.
Well, we've learned a lot today. Chronically hurtful people, how to identify and deal with the difficult, destructive, and disconnected. Roxanne Livingston, its author, our guest. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Glad to have you. That'll do it for this hour of The Exchange. It'll do it for the whole show of The Exchange today. You can find us on the web.